At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
This is the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the sticks, me, Matt Beadle, here with the comical voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Matthew, comical, go on.
Yeah, so I have been looking at some archive notes over the past week or so, and I stumbled across something, and a little clip as well, a video clip, and I thought, no, this cannot be real. This cannot be the case that at some point in past, Richard Lee was a stand-up comedian.
Did I not tell you this? We've known each other a long time. Have I not told you this?
This cannot be true. This cannot. Everything I know about you, it cannot be the case that you stood up in front of a bunch of people and did stand-up comedy.
It's true.
My word.
It is true. This is one of those, like, what's the show? Would I Lie to You? You know, that's the kind of thing where I guess I would say, yeah, I was once a stand-up comedian, and then I've got to obviously try and make them believe that I am. Is it going to be true or false? Surely it's false, but no, it is absolutely true, Matthew. Yes, I did a gig. Do you want the story?
Yeah, please.
And actually, I'm going to be able to link this quite nicely back into being a goalkeeper, believe it or not. So, story goes that I was in a... it's going to sound like therapy now. I was in a stage in my life where I... Do you know what? I was studying a lot of psychology, and I love the idea of challenging yourself. You know, if something was kind of deemed fearful, then you kind of have to do it. Like, that's just the way it is. You want to break through those fears and become more confident in who you are. And so the thinking was I was getting into a bit of public speaking, doing the odd talk here and there. And I thought, you know what, something that would be really, really scary was the idea of doing a stand-up comedy show. Like, I watch these guys. I don't consider myself particularly funny. I know what you might say, Matthew, and that I am hilarious. And maybe that's just a limiting belief that I now have. So maybe I shouldn't say that. But in that moment, I thought, I wouldn't consider myself a comedian. So how about that? What if I did a course in stand-up comedy? Could that then, well, firstly, make me a little bit more comical? Maybe, maybe not. But no, secondly, it was more like, actually, that would be like a really, really good challenge. So I went on a course. I did it for 6 weeks, learned how to structure jokes. Haven't really taken that with me in future life at all. Don't shake your head at me. So I learned kind of the structure, how you present, how you then get to the punchline, et cetera, et cetera. So then I put together, it was only like maybe 6 to 8 minutes was the actual thing. And what it was then all of the people that did the course, the finishing of the course was you do a gig. So it happened to be at Empire Casino, Leicester Square, quite the venue. I reckon there was about 60 people in the crowd, and before you ask, I can't remember a single joke that I told, but all I do remember is that I did it all football related, so that was kind of my thing, and it was reasonably well received, I think. In fact, it was very well received. I felt quite nervous going up there, but it was good. I really enjoyed it.
So were you a player, sorry, at the time? Yeah, yeah. Were you playing football at
still
the time?
Still playing, so I'd go on, I think it was like Monday and Thursday night or whatever, I'd go to this class, and yeah, I did it for 6 weeks, did a lot of classes, did a lot of homework, and then it ended up with that. And then you're kind of like given the choice of whether you want to take it to the next level and do the next course and so on and so forth. But really for me, it was just it's just another thing, you know. I quite liked it, like where I was kind of going through that whole the Dragon's Den or doing the different courses, I was just thinking that idea of continual and never-ending improvement I quite liked, and I just thought that was something to add an extra string to the bow.
So well received by the audience. Well, they laughed, I'm presuming.
They did, yeah. It didn't turn into like a serious talk or anything like that. No, they did laugh, but then it was quite a nice environment because you could imagine it's a lot of beginners, so you had like maybe 8 of us that were doing it, so the crowd were very forgiving. You know, I don't know whether if I was doing it professionally, whether they'd have been quite so forgiving, because you could imagine a lot of guys and girls that were going up there that were very nervous and maybe weren't quite delivering in the way that they hoped they would and what have you. But it was such an accepting audience that I don't think you could really have failed in a situation like that. But no, a couple of the jokes I made from memory did go down quite well. And again, I cannot remember them. So there's absolutely no joke. No. No, there's absolutely no chance of me
desperate for you to just give us a slice of the routine.
I just remember doing a piece on a typical footballer's interview. I remember doing that, and I think I pulled out every single cliche that you could ever imagine. So that was part of the routine. I'm going to call it a routine now. Let's go with that.
Okay. Well, I saw this as part of a video clip, so I'm guessing somewhere deep beneath the cellar of a house that you once lived in, maybe the DVD or the cuttings are there. For us to listen to.
It is somewhere. And genuinely, was it a VHS or a DVD? I'm thinking it was DVD. I think we had progressed from the VHS into the DVD era. So I'm pretty sure it's a DVD. It is somewhere. And again, I have absolutely no idea. And I don't want to find it, if I'm honest. I'm not that keen on getting it out there. Don't think it's going to lead to a different career. I'm quite content with our weekly podcast.
Wow. I mean, fair play to you. Fair play for going on. I mean, if anybody was going to go on a course to try and be funny, it's Richard Lee. You can't just, that sort of thing just comes naturally, does it not? Being funny. But no, I had to go on a course and make it very methodical.
Did I ever tell you about my dance lessons I took?
Really?
We'll save that for another episode.
Okay, brilliant. That's next week's Voice of Goalkeeping. Okay, brilliant. I've got one bit of correspondence for you, Richard. Now, I'm not sure if I've read this out before, if I'm brutally honest, because going through the archives as I was, I went to see whether I'd read this out before, and this chap's name came up. I went and checked the podcast and listened to it, and I didn't actually read the email because we were short on time. Now, I don't know whether I've read it out since. I can't actually remember. So I'm just going to read it out again because it's quite a good one. Okay?
Okay. Go for it.
It's from a gent called William Ilsley. He says, good afternoon, chaps. Relatively new listener here, trying to spread the GK word here in Sweden. I've been playing as a goalkeeper for nearly 20 years or so, but I've noticed as I get older, I find finger injuries hurt a lot more now than they used to. You know, the nasty ones where a seemingly innocuous ball catches you right on the fingertip. Classic. As a younger player, I could probably carry on as usual, but now coming up to 30, I find the swelling and pain lingers for much longer. Unfortunately, I'm the only keeper at my current club, meaning I often have to play through the pain barrier. I've never been a fan of gloves with finger protection, and a few of the coaches I had always warned me against them because it was their opinion that they actually caused more injuries. However, I appreciate glove technology is constantly changing. Is there any form of protection you could recommend to limit the frequency of these injuries, or is it just the fact of goalkeeping life one has to grin and bear? Top job, William from Gothenburg.
Ah, nice, William. It's a good question. Now, what will my answer be? Firstly, I fully appreciate the pain that he's going through. I'm sure I've shown you my finger before, which is shaped like a knick-knack. You know, the delicious crisps. Other crisps are available, but they are very, very good. Especially, what's the flavour that...
Nice and spicy.
Oh, what a great...
Yeah.
Oh, that's made me hungry now. What are we talking about? Fingers. So, yes, look, I certainly feel his pain. Very similarly. And I think as well, of course, obvious statement, but as you get older, the injuries don't ever necessarily clear up 100%. You'll always have something there. So naturally, when you're catching however many balls a day, you're going to aggravate them over and over and over. It's actually a tough one for me to give advice on this because I was probably in the school of grin and bear it. You know, if it got too bad, then I'll take a few days off and obviously, if it was ever a break or anything like that, then you take longer off. But to be honest, it was just for me, it was grin and bear it. I never went down the route of the finger saves and what have you. Like I say, I know a lot of goalkeepers do. For me, and again, I don't know if I'm right in saying this, but I just kind of felt that using regular gloves, you get a bit more feel on the ball. I always worried for like younger goalkeepers, you might become a bit lazy in your handling if you've got the finger protection there rather than actually generating the correct technique to control the ball, etc. So look, do you know what? As much as I like to have an answer ordinarily, and without wanting to prescribe painkillers or whatever else, it was one for me that it was grin and bear it. I'm just trying to think of lads that I played with, because there's a few that had bad fingers, and other than strappings. I mean, again, I'm sure he will have tried that. Where I used to do that, certainly with my little finger, the one that, I mean, I broke countless times, I would then strap it just to kind of like make it that little bit more secure. So the classic kind of white tape, putting around the two knuckles, obviously not too tight, because you've got to be a little bit careful with blood flow and all that, but certainly just to make it that little bit harder to injure, I guess. But again, I say that, and if you get one on the end of your finger, it doesn't matter whether you've got finger protection or anything, if you get it on the end of your finger, that wobbler that comes in that, you know, just catches you, it's the worst pain. So for all of that, for all of those words, I don't really have an answer. I am sorry.
Okay, well, I think hopefully William is taking something from that. So thank you for that, William. And if you listeners would like to get in touch with us just like William did, it's just so easy to do so on Twitter at GK Union, hello at goalkeepersunion.net, or on our phone number 07503673020. On with the show.
Let's do it.
Right, Richard, we are going to start in the FA Cup, where there was a whopper of a stop in the game between Manchester United and Fulham. The game ended up 3-1, but we've got to call out a maybe save of the weekend contender from Willian. What a save.
Fantastic. Moved across the line so quickly, struck out a right arm, deflected it around the post. Really, really impressive. I've got to credit the footwork.
Which sparked just quite remarkable scenes that we don't really need to get into, but wow, that was bonkers, wasn't it? Absolute madness.
Pandemonium. Yeah, no, it was, yeah, look, you could tell. And it was obviously a key moment, and the game obviously flipped, you know, instantly on that moment, and the next few minutes were just, just crazy. But yeah, when you see it again, there's not really a great deal that can be argued with. And I get it, when you're 1-0 up, whatever it was, 15 minutes to go, such a good chance of reaching the semi-final. And you kind of know in that moment, you know, you're going down to 10 men, and the 9 men because of obviously Mitrovic as well, that it's going to be that much tougher to then try and see the game out, potentially extra time, etc. So I get that emotions are high, but again, I'm sure that once things have settled down, they've seen it again, there can't really be too much argument.
What I loved about Willian and his reaction to the save that he made, I don't know whether this was just camera trickery and just the angle that we saw it, but whether he was getting all confused and just trying desperately to protest his innocence, but he had his wrist, didn't he, like up against his chest, as if to say, it hit me here, ref, it hit me here on the chest, but he was pointing at his knuckles as if to say, no, ref, hit me here, I've just made a great save, I want to be mentioned on the Goalkeepers Union podcast, it hit me right here, ref.
It always makes you think back to the classic Stephen Taylor one, you know, where he's sort of rolling around on the goal line and like acting as if it's like punctured a lung, you know. But the thing is now, like, again, maybe a couple of years ago before VAR, you've got half a chance if you can pretend well enough. And of course, it was almost part of the art of the game, something like that. Can you get away with? And we've seen so many classic examples over the years. But the problem is now is that you kind of know, he must have known that he's not going to get away with this. Like, you know, of course, now they're going to look at it from every different angle. They're going to see what's happened. And he knows what's happened. So he would have known what was going to happen thereafter. But of course, yeah, the scenes that it sparked eventually killed off Fulham's chance.
At the other end, there was a brilliant save from David De Gea and Alexander Mitrovic header. Now, ITV seemed to excel themselves this weekend. We've got a couple coming up from the various pundits. But Ian Wright, apparently, this was a save that David De Gea should make.
Of course he should. I mean, look, just, you know, incredibly quick footwork, explosive spring, full stretch to get a top hand, put it around the post. I mean, it's ridiculous to think that he wouldn't have made this save. I mean, pretty much every goalkeeper on the planet makes this save. No, this is a bit, and I know we talk about it way too often, but you still have to credit great saves. You know, the fact that he's worked as hard as he has away from the training ground in order to generate the kind of power, speed, spring, athleticism, technique, everything that's involved in this, it is a phenomenal save. It's another classic De Gea for me. You know, we talk about, I think we spoke about it last week, where you got like an Emi Martinez who's like raw power, explosive, whereas David De Gea has this kind of elegance to him, you know, and he kind of glides and makes it look pretty effortless, but absolutely not a save that you're expected to make. It's a save that very few keepers can make.
It's got to a point now where you kind of accept those comments now, the straight at hims, the nice height for a goalkeeper, the either side of the goalkeeper, and it's in the flaps at crosses, beating at the near post. It's so ingrained within the lexicon of those particular pundits that there's no point bleating on about it. We have done it, and now it's just a case of it is what it is. But every so often, there are ones like that where you think, no, I've got to mention that, because that's, like you say, absolutely not a save that he should be expected to make. But David De Gea's game as well. A lot has been said about David De Gea's footwork this season or forever. And even as close as yesterday, I saw some tweets, you know, mocking David De Gea for him playing out from the back. 91% pass accuracy he had yesterday, De Gea. Only two players in the United team were better than him. That was Jadon Sancho and Lisandro Martinez. So, you know, he's not doing too bad.
No, but I think it's, again, it's just a general, I don't know if it's just British culture or if it's around the world, I'm not too sure, but it's much easier to find fault in something than to credit the good. You know, I often watch, when I watch a lot of modern day football, and the standard of goalkeeping now is so high, I sometimes think if a commentator, like today's commentators, were to commentate on a game from back in the 60s, 70s, 80s, whatever it might be, when you watch those old games and you see how much goalkeeping has developed, so have outfield players, of course, in a massive, massive way, but I just think that now, that the expected standard of goalkeeping is almost to be faultless a lot of the time. I give that example a lot, where I'd almost liken a goalkeeper to a referee. Like, you know, if the referee comes out of the game and almost mentions his name, he's normally had a good game. And that is often the case. Certainly with these outfield pundits, if the goalkeeper isn't mentioned, it normally means they've been an 8, 9 out of 10. And again, they might get that bit of praise if they do make a phenomenal save late on in a key moment. But it is becoming harder and harder for a goalkeeper to come out of a game with huge credit.
At Bramall Lane, it was Sheffield United 3, Blackburn 2, and a ding-dong encounter. What a cup tie this was. And Wes Fotheringham and Ainsley Pears, both with very good performances. Pears, really good save from James McAtee in a one-on-one. And Fotheringham, a double save from Harry Pickering and Ben Brereton-Diaz. Very impressive.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, a tough save actually down low, the first one, where it's, you know, so many bodies around you. Firstly, to see the ball in the way that he did, you're not really able to, certainly if you can't hold it, it's very difficult to parry into a safe area. But what he does well is he parries it as far away as he can, but it's a speed of movement to get up and actually reading of the game, seeing where the danger area is, which in that particular moment is to his left-hand side. Effectively, he's just read the game very well, kind of knowing that the player coming in is likely to put it to that side. So I don't want to use the word gambled, I'll use a better word. He's predicted exactly where it's going to go. So if you actually freeze frame at the point the second shot struck, he's already well on his way, and he actually makes the second save look reasonably comfortable. But it's very, very good goalkeeping.
And I said that ITV excelled themselves this weekend with the punditry, which means we're going to have one of these, the first one in a while.
Commentary corner.
So there was a penalty scored in this game by Brereton Diaz. Now, Eni Aluko, who was on the panel with ITV, seemed to think that he should have done better. Her theory being that, she said a few things, but mainly the theory being that if you get a hand to it, I think you can do better as a goalkeeper. Now, you've seen the penalty. You've seen Wes Fotheringham correctly guess the right way and not be able to keep it out. But one, Brereton Diaz rifled through that with his instep. And two, I mean, come on, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, that was the word I was going to use, ridiculous. Because it's just, again, that kind of idea. And again, this goes back to, you mentioned some of the cliches earlier, but that idea that if you get a hand to it must mean you can do better. We're going to speak actually shortly about Kepa, I'm sure, in terms of the equaliser that he conceded, where there's similarities to that as well, where I think it's that. If he doesn't get a hand to it, does that mean that he shouldn't do better? You know, it's one that, it's a good penalty. He's not gone early. He's waited for Brereton Diaz to make his decision, which he did. The thing that Wes Fotheringham does as well is he's looking to dive low. You can see that as he goes to explode, he's thinking it's going to go in the bottom corner. That's certainly maybe the research he's done. Obviously goes a bit higher. So then to be able to adjust the body, move your hands, get enough of a hand to get this away from danger is nigh on impossible. So just because it clips his fingers on the way through, there's no chance or no reason that he should do better. Now, had he have decided to have done a mid-dive, which, again, this would have been based on the research he did before the penalty, I'm sure, that he's looked at this and thought, he normally goes bottom corner, so I'm going to try and explode into the bottom corner, then maybe he can get slightly more of a dive away and his hands might be better positioned in order to make the save. But you've got to remember that this is a penalty. From 12 yards, you are on the line. So in order to get it away from danger, even that, it's not like you're 4 or 5 yards from the line and you can get fingertips to it and it's going to go around the post. You have to do it from your line. So to get a strong enough hand is always going to be really, really difficult on a penalty. So yeah, any suggestion that he could do better here for me is way off.
That's where you really want a goalkeeping pundit, isn't it? To literally just say what you said there and see the reaction from one of the other pundits to go, okay, all right, okay, fine. Because yeah. They'd have nothing to come come back with.
But that's the point. There is no opposition. So it gets said and it then gets left. And then it's just that annoyance for me in that you've got however many million watching on TV that instantly think, oh, yeah, maybe he could have done better. Now, again, maybe you could argue it's irrelevant what some of the punters think. But I know from a goalkeeper's point of view, it's frustrating when you come away. And I've had that myself. When you come away thinking, I had a really good game today. And yet there'll be something in the paper or you'll hear a comment when you watch the highlights later on that suggests that you could have done a little bit more with something that may lead to a goal or whatever. And again, when you know goalkeeping as you do, you kind of feel that's not fair. You've kind of now labelled some negativity against me, which might then feed into that little bit more and people questioning a performance. Whereas every goalkeeping expert, every goalkeeping pundit, if there was one, would have backed him up in that situation.
Yeah, fair to say the responses we had on Twitter to that were effectively the same. Actually, a lot of people saying, so what, if a striker touches the ball with his foot in the penalty area, that means that he should be scoring a goal. Like, that's essentially what you're saying there. And in fairness to the two other guys and girls in the studio, Laura Woods, I think, was presenting, and your old pal, Joby McEnough, was also there. Both disagreed and said, no, that is a great penalty. Just to finish up, and actually a very good save as well from the initial chance that created the penalty. Nothing was mentioned about that, the top hand tip over the bar. So another good performance from Wes Fotheringham. But just one more piece in the FA Cup to mention. We had a tweet in from Stop the Affiliates, quite the Twitter handle that. Is this handball? They asked. Robert Sanchez, Brighton 5, Grimsby 0. But at 1-0, I think it was, did Robert Sanchez handle the ball outside of the area?
Yeah, and it really could have changed the game. And do you know, I've watched this from so many angles, and for me, it's inconclusive because, of course, you know, it's like the whole goal line technology. You literally need a millimetre of the ball that's not fully crossed the line, and of course, it's not a goal. So the question is there a millimetre of the ball that is on the line? And that's the bit that, of course, from what I understand, there isn't technology to do that when it comes to a situation like this. And so I've watched it from several angles. I can't tell. There's one angle from behind where you're almost looking at him from almost like the corner flag, and that looks very much like it's outside the box. But then, of course, it's quite deceptive because of the angle you're looking at it from. So I genuinely can't tell. What's your thoughts? Go on, I'll throw it back at you.
I think it's impossible. You can't. There's no, if you don't have the technology to measure that, there's no way that you can give it because you're looking at it from so many different angles, but none of those being straight across the line. So there's absolutely no way that you can give it. I think there was it last season? There was a moment in a game between West Ham and Manchester United when Dean Henderson launched the ball along the touchline, and I think United scored as a result of that pass. And they were looking at it on VAR to see whether the ball had actually gone out before it had come back in. But there's no way, there's no metric to measure it. So there's no way that you can establish whether or not the ball is over or not over the line.
So obviously you being of the mindset that you are when it comes to VAR, you're essentially championing the idea that we then have even more technology, I take it. So maybe a camera going down the line and maybe a camera across the 18-yard box. Is that what you're saying, Matt?
No, because then it becomes Big Brother, which is in an even worse state than we're already in. That's the last thing that we need.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
And some action in the Premier League, of course. Wolves 2, Leeds 4. Ian Melier, Richard, has become the youngest goalkeeper to reach 100 Premier League appearances. He's done that at the age of 23 years and 16 days. A good save from Raul Jimenez in this one, although Dion Dublin did seem to claim that he was at fault for the Johnny goal. He came out with a great diving header, a good advanced position, and who would know that Johnny, who I think has scored, what, 1-2 goals in the Premier League before, would be able to execute a volley as perfectly as that?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, said good save. I'd say it was a phenomenal save. I thought the, you know, point blank, the reading of the game, similar to what we said about Wes Fodringham a minute ago, I just thought that he's read this situation so well, moved his body, got himself, again, at point of impact. He's made himself so big and got to the foot of the ball. And I thought it was a top, top save, this. And exactly what you said there. Look, ball's come through. He's read the game well. He's come out, got a big header. It's not like it's gone a few yards. It's gone near enough to the halfway line. Even after that, they've managed to get a foot to it. And as you say, before it gets to Johnny, who's a good 45, 50 yards out, and it's a phenomenal finish. I mean, the only thing, if you were nitpicking, then can he head into a different area? But possibly not, because the ball's coming straight. So to then try and angle your header to get it away from danger, if anything, might cause more issues. You're not going to get the distance on the header that you want to get. So I don't really know what he could do differently here. I'd certainly always advise the goalkeepers that I work with to do what he's done here. Be on the front foot. If it comes through and you can power a header like that 30-odd yards away, then, you know, percentages would suggest that 99 times out of 100, you will be okay in this situation. And that's the bit, again, where, again, controlling the controllables, you can only focus on what you can affect. If someone's going to produce a worldy finish like this, then it is what it is. But I think to then lay blame at the goalkeeper, because what's the other alternative? That he stays on his six-yard box and lets them have a one-on-one? Again, the likelihood, the percentages of them scoring is going to be much higher if he's playing a game like that. So, yeah, for me, I thought the goalkeeping here was absolutely fine. I thought he read it well, good header, and it is just one of those moments. Sometimes things like this happen.
Building quite the CV, by the way, Melier. So most Premier League clean sheets in a single season by an under-21 goalkeeper. Most Premier League starts made in a single season by an under-21 goalkeeper. The youngest Premier League goalkeeper to keep 10 clean sheets. The youngest Premier League goalkeeper to make 50 appearances. And now the youngest Premier League goalkeeper to make 100 appearances.
Yeah, phenomenal. I mean, to have a CV like that, you know, when you think as well in the English game, where ordinarily the young goalkeepers that are coming through, and there's a lot of top young goalkeepers out on loan at the moment, but ordinarily that is the way in which it goes. It's almost like you're not deemed to be ready for the Premier League until you're 23, 24, you know, and by that point, for those that have broken through, you know, Aaron Ramsdale, Rob Sanchez, whoever else it might be, the younger goalkeepers that have made their name in the Premier League, they are normally at least 22, normally 24, 25, and they've played 100 odd games at the lower level. But for him to have been a consistent starter as well, you know, he's been performing at a high level for such a period of time. I can't remember a time that he's lost his place. You might correct me if I'm wrong on that. But to be so consistent and continually improving in the way that he is, he's got an exciting 15, 20 years ahead of him.
Yeah, no, not since he's taken the gloves or took the gloves from Kiko Kassia. He's not missed a single game, I don't think. Maybe one where Christopher Klessen came in late on in the game. But bar that, I think he's played pretty much every single game. You said we'd talk about Kepa as well. We will do that right now. Chelsea 2, Everton 2. So the Ellis Sims equaliser for Everton. Kepa was questioned across the board here.
Yeah, and I don't really agree, if I'm honest, because I think this is another one of those situations where goalkeepers have different techniques to deal with this type of shot. So I use De Gea a lot in this example, because I think David De Gea uses his foot to go for this, whereas I think obviously someone like Kepa sets a little bit lower, body weight very much on his toes, and looks to get down and make the sharp save. Now, is one better than the other? I'm sure that some statistician might tell me that, you know, one particular technique might be more preferable in this situation. But I suppose where I look at it, and where I was probably similar to Kepa here, that was always a technique that I would use, would be a situation like this. They're very close in. He's put a good deal of power onto it, down to his left-hand side. He's decided to go down with his hand. Again, look, can he save it? On another day, he possibly gets a full hand to it. If he does save it, it's a world-class save. To get down that sharply from that close in, it would be a world-class save. The other thing that goes against him here, it's almost in that corridor where it's not quite full stretch. It's almost just inside. So that makes it a little bit tougher as well. So I don't think this is one that, again, should be should save that. I think it's one that if he saves it, it's an excellent save. If he doesn't save it, then, and again, this is the question. If he doesn't get a hand to it, if it just beats him all ends up and he's, you know, a foot away from it, does anybody question it? Probably not. But again, this goes back to the idea of what we spoke of before, that kind of general mentality that, oh, well, if you get a touch on it, you can do better. Like, no, that's not always the case. You know, you actually watch this. And the other bit with this, I say watch it in real time. It doesn't look like an error at all, in my opinion. It's when you slow it down, super slow-mo, and of course you look and think, oh, if only he could have got a full hand to it instead of the inside of his wrist, effectively, then yeah, it does look like it could be a reasonably comfortable save. But I think you watch it in real time, I don't think he's done a hell of a lot wrong here.
It was referenced as well on commentary that he took the armband when the captain, I can't remember who it was for Chelsea, that went off, but Kepa took the armband, and Alan Smith, I think it was, said, you know, he's come a long way. His career at Chelsea has gone 180. So I think people should definitely remember that too. Four more in the Premier League just to finish up. David Raya, a number 10 in goal, was tweeted by Brentford yesterday. Some trickery. Outfield trickery from David Raya in the draw between Brentford and Leicester. Emi Martinez with an Emi Martinez save, I suppose you could say, from Philip Billing. Villa 3, Bournemouth 0. Dan Iverson in for his Prem debut at Leicester. And Joe Whitworth as well in for his pro debut. 19 years old and 15 days. That was his debut for Crystal Palace in the defeat to Brighton during midweek. And then back in again for the game against Arsenal, an injury crisis, a goalkeeping injury crisis at Selhurst Park. But Joe Whitworth coming in, much said about the fact that he's very much a local lad. And yeah, a good account of himself.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm trying to think where to start here. Let's go with the easy one first. Yeah, classic Emi. We spoke about it last week, and he's got that in the locker. I love this free kick. It's his side, top corner. But how many goalkeepers do you see that get beaten with a shot like this? You know, it's absolutely fired into the top corner, but thought he was very brave with his position, held his ground, fully extended, so powerful. I know we say it every time when we reference Emi Martinez, but it's just that explosive power is fantastic, and the technique with the top hand, top save. David Raya, yeah, no, I quite enjoyed this just for the fact that I thought it was intelligent goalkeeping, like fancy footwork, obviously shows, well, we know how good he is with his feet, but you could see the whole time all he was thinking is, I need to get this away from danger. He kind of realised in that moment that I'm in a bit of trouble here. And so as much as he was kind of showing a bit of trickery on the ball, it was always with the idea of getting it out wide and then looking to clip it down the line, which I think is quite a nice lesson for younger goalkeepers to have that awareness in that moment that that's what was needed. The Joe Whitworth one, first and foremost, I've been watching Joe for a few years now, and he is top keeper. It's an interesting one because we spoke about this a lot. First and foremost, delighted for him. I thought he was very, very good in his debut. A couple of saves he made, the one down right in particular, so sharp. I loved his body language. He looked so calm and confident. You know, you can imagine many goalkeepers being thrown into a situation like this, how they might be. But it is an interesting one for me because we spoke a lot, and I still stand by the idea that for a Premier League club, you know, there's a lot of pressure on Joe Whitworth stepping in. Now, look, credit to Palace. They obviously know just how mentally strong he is, and they felt very confident in him stepping in like this. But it's so unusual now in today's game for someone to make their professional debut in a Premier League game. You know, I can't think of many goalkeepers that have done that without having had the loan. It goes back to what we're talking about with Ilan Meslier. Now, on one hand, I hope this becomes more the norm, because I think there's so many top young goalkeepers at these clubs that don't ever get that look in. And it's almost a thought now that, well, you won't get that until you've got 100 games under your belt, which I don't think is necessary. But then I understand it, because at the same time, Premier League football, they want the tried and tested because of the money that's at stake and the level, etc., etc. So it's a really, really interesting situation for me, where ordinarily you'll see the goalkeeping departments that will have their 1, 2, 3 that are all established goalkeepers. Then normally the 4 and 5 will be out getting loans. And I guess that's the question with someone like Joe Whitworth. And no doubt now, I'd like to think that he'll get himself a very good loan going into next season. But that will always be the argument. Is it better for the young goalkeepers to be out on loan playing week in, week out, and then build their way back into a Premier League team? Or have Palace got the right idea? Is it one where actually, you know, it's not a case of having to go out there and get games at a lower level? If you believe you're good enough, have them as a number three and just allow them to progress. In fairness, Kelleher has done it at Liverpool, and no one really questions that. So two trains of thought, and certainly the fact that he stepped in and done himself proud. And, you know, I don't think it would have made much difference had it been a Remy Matthews or a Jack Butland, who are obviously out on loan at the moment from Crystal Palace. Would it have made much difference to the two scorelines? Probably not. So yeah, a really interesting situation. Two schools of thought as to what you should do. But yeah, massive credit to Joe Whitworth.
The other school of thought, of course, being that of Dan Iverson, who spent swathes of his pro career on loan at AFL clubs.
Exactly that. And look, credit to him to step in, get a result in his first game, which is great for him. He did so, so well at Preston. I know the fans up there absolutely adored him and the managers he had, etc. So again, that's the other path into a Premier League team. And he's certainly done his dues at the lower levels and certainly the Championship for a long time. So again, more than ready to step in and did himself proud.
It is the EFL overview in the Championship, where Thomas Vashlik and Angus Gunn put in huge performances for Huddersfield and Norwich respectively. Vashlik making four solid stops in a win for the Terriers at Millwall, and Gunn revisiting a former loan outfit in Stoke and keeping a clean sheet in a goalless draw there. Nice to see Zach Steffen upturning his form in the second half of the season. A good save from Tom Cannon as Middlesbrough put Preston to the sword. And a bit of the good, bad and the ugly for Anthony Patterson in the draw between Sunderland and Luton. First saving well from Alfie Doughty, but then letting the same man's free kick just squirm through. And Senny Dieng, not mentioned him too much this season, but twice brilliantly denying Lukas Jukovic in what ended up being another defeat for QPR, this time at home to Birmingham.
Yeah, well, I thought I'd mention Anthony Patterson because, as you mentioned, top save down low to his left from Alfie Doughty. We'll, of course, be disappointed with the goal, and it's an interesting one again because it's one of these that you take away all the other players in this scenario. It's a very comfortable save. So, again, I'm not necessarily saying that it's not an error because it is, and he'll be the first to hold his hands up and say he should have done better with this. But it was the presence of all the other players because, effectively, what's happened, it's come through bodies. And it ends up being, although it was a shot from 20 yards, for him it's a shot from 5 yards, you know, and he wasn't able to react quick enough. The technique wasn't quite what he needed in that moment. You know, we always talk in real basic terms, you know, the idea of get your body behind the ball. This was, you know, essentially one of them where he hasn't quite got the technique to collapse and make the save in the way that he wanted to do. But it is difficult when you've got so many people in front of him. But naturally, it will be one that he'll be very frustrated by. And yet, certainly some credit for Senny Dieng. Again, frustrating afternoon for QPR, but again, on a personal level, it's always that tough one for a keeper when you come off and you kind of feel like you've had a top game and you lose the game 1-0. And it's that one as well that the good saves don't always necessarily get remembered in a moment like that. But they were two top saves. And certainly, I know we spoke about Senny Dieng a lot on this show over the years, you know, top keeper there. It'd be interesting to see what happens with him in the summer, and certainly interesting to see what happens with QPR if this slide continues. And Thomas Vashlik, actually watched this game and thought he was excellent. You know, tough game again away at Millwall. They've been in poor form recently, really struggling for goals. And realistically, I know it sounds harsh on Huddersfield, but for them to stay up, they're going to need a lot of clean sheets between now and the end of the season, because you don't see them creating all that many chances. But certainly Thomas Vashlik in the last few weeks has been immense for them.
Into League One, where James Trafford was on the end of a bit of lair, it seemed, from Josh Windass as Bolton held Sheffield Wednesday at Hillsborough. So great reactions earlier in the game to keep out Lee Gregory. But when Gregory scored a few minutes later, Windass seemed to think that Trafford deserved some stick, or at least that's what it looked like. Keen to know more about that. Christian Walton spoke about him at length last week. Another victory for Ipswich and yet another first-class save, this time from a Luke Leahy header in a 2-0 defeat of Shrewsbury. That's 7 clean sheets on the bounce now, if you're asking, for Christian Walton. A possible rare error from Carl Rushworth in conceding Peterborough's second as Posh beat Lincoln 3-0 at Sinsel Bank. Now, this one may have nicked off the defender, but whomever the defender was, he was quick to make a point to everyone in attendance that Rushworth may have been to blame. And three more, Luke Southwood continuing his fine form on loan at Cheltenham, but bit of payback to Exeter for that defeat earlier in the season, saving Sam Nombi's spot kick and the Robins running out 3-1 victors. Ashley Maynard-Brewer also continuing to hold down the number one spot at Charlton. That's because he makes saves like the one from Ryan Bennett in the away win at Cambridge. Things potentially looking up for the Addicts ahead of next term. And a save of the weekend contender from Jamie Cumming. Now, it's been a tough season with a number of changes at MK Dons, but one constant has been Cumming, and he made a massive stop in the battle to beat the drop, palming away Tommy Lee's effort in a 1-0 victory over Accrington.
Yeah, huge, huge save this. Huge save to his left-hand side. I mean, you look at it from behind, and it's a really good camera angle, actually. It's going in the corner the whole way, and how he gets across there, speed of feet, spring, brilliant, brilliant save and vital save for them at the moment. They're picking up some valuable points. And certainly that, I knew they had this run of games where they could pick up some points potentially with teams around them. And they've certainly made the most of that. So giving themselves a good chance. The Rushworth one's interesting. And again, you can't tell. And this is where the camera angle does kill you a little bit when you haven't got that camera angle from behind the shot. Because if it takes a nick, then you'd argue there's not a lot he can do. If it doesn't take a nick, then the only thing that I can think is that he doesn't quite set in the way that he'd want to set, whether the body weight, whether he's expecting it to go across him and he's maybe just edging a bit and isn't able to get back down, because it does look a bit of an odd one from the camera angle that we've got. And yet, you mentioned Luke Southwood really has been in excellent form, certainly since sort of December onwards for Cheltenham. And again, they're getting closer and closer to safety, which I know was very much their goal. And from his point of view, just adding to that CV, which has built nicely this season. And yet, big save from Ashley Maynard-Brewer down to his left. Again, another goalkeeper that's been in fine form. This was one that, again, tough one, because it's right on his goal line, so needs to parry it out wide, gets two good hands to it, gets himself up nice and quickly for the follow-up, which doesn't come, but really, really sharp goalkeeping. And finally, James Trafford. Again, someone else that we speak about a lot on the show. Of course, many, many clean sheets this season, building a lot of admirers. Great save down to his left, really, really sharp. The goal, he had absolutely no chance with, of course, because it took a deflection and ends up going in the top corner. So I don't know what's happened here. I can only assume, knowing Traff to an extent, I know that he is very confident and he will say the odd thing. So my guess is that it might have been that. I might be wrong, but he does play with that swagger, you know, which I personally do really like in goalkeepers, where they're playing with that kind of mentality, that kind of body language. Traff certainly has that in abundance. So that would be my guess, but I actually don't know the answer to this.
And to League Two, where it's all about the loans. Nothing auditarium about James Beglin, his spell at Crewe. Alex losing at Northampton, but only by one, thanks to seven saves made from the 6'6" stopper. Jakub Stolarczyk, quick note on him. With one Leicester stopper in Dan Iverson, of course, making his Prem debut this weekend, another Leicester stopper in Stolarczyk is now 9 games into his EFL career. So he had a loan spell at Fleetwood earlier in the season. That didn't really work out, but he's now very much in for Ben Killip at Paul's. Only 2 defeats in 9 as they fight desperately to stay in League Two. And Sol Brin, on loan at Swindon from Middlesbrough and taking part in a bonkers 4-4 draw at Rochdale. Ensuring a point was had, however, with a great reaction save from Danny Lloyd.
Yeah, it was a top save, this. Really sharp, down to his left. Kind of looks like it hits a post as well when you watch the replay, but definitely gets a hand on it. Really good save. And James Beale actually watched this game as well. And yeah, he certainly hit the ground running at Crewe in a big way. And I thought it was excellent again. Big top hand save. Several other saves to mention. No chance of the goal. Real frustrating goal from Crewe's point of view, in that it was effectively a free kick in their half, and nothing more frustrating for a goalkeeper where you're making save after save, and then it was just really sloppy defending. So no doubt that'd have been a frustrating one for him. Again, he's a goalkeeper that's certainly building a lot of admirers, even though it's only been a handful of games.
And as much as it pains me to say, we do have to reference one of these.
Bada boom, bada bing, it's only a keeper keeper.
So Stuart Moore on an emergency loan at Doncaster. Maybe a bit of ring rust in allowing Salford's Stevie Mallon's speculative effort slip in. I'm not sure. Either way, he did also make a couple of decent stops. It was a defeat at Salford, and naturally those ones didn't make the edit because of the error from the goal.
Yeah, and I felt from you mentioned it there, it is exactly that. You know, when you haven't played for a period of time, how often do we see that goalkeepers step in? And it's different. You can play every 23s game that there is. You can play the B team games. But if you're not getting the experience of first team football, it is difficult to step back into that environment. And it's not necessarily the game itself. It's everything that surrounds the game, the build up to it, knowing that you're going to be playing in front of fans again, what it means to the team, to your teammates, etc. So naturally, the emotions are going to be heightened that little bit. And if it's been a while since you've done it, you'll often see that for a lot of goalkeepers, it's one where you almost want them to have a quiet few games to build into it. And then they really start to be in full flow, which is why, I mean, it's a different conversation, but we talk a lot about, you know, where you have your goalkeepers in and out all the time and how rarely teams are successful when that's the case. Now, of course, with Doncaster, that's not the case here. It was an injury to Johnny Mitchell, which meant they needed to go into the emergency loan market. With Lewis Jones being out as well, you feel a bit sorry for Doncaster. They've had, similar to Stevenage, they've had their goalkeeping issues. But for Stuart Moore, it is just as simple as that. For him, it's one that, look, it's a shot from distance. It's no doubt moved a little bit on him. He's tried to hold it. You know, maybe he could have tried to pat it down if it was moving a bit. I'm not too sure, but I think it's as simple as that. Rather than sort of going into depth and analysing his set position, his body movement, movement, his this, that, the other. I think it is just as simple as that. But he hasn't played for a period of time. And because of that, he has got a little bit mixed up in this situation. Wasn't able to get the two hands on it in the way that he wanted. And it's a really frustrating one when it squirms through, just goes over the line. He can't quite claw it out. Look, it's one of those moments. But no doubt he'll kick on in the next game now that he's got the game under his belt.
Final word on ITV here too, because I was watching the highlights that evening, on Saturday evening, of the Football League, and there was some horrendous research regarding this situation. So they made a big thing about the fact that Jonny Mitchell had been dropped by Danny Schofield because he made the error last week, I think it was, against AFC Wimbledon. So they showed that error and then showed the error from Stuart Moore as well, and so, you know, Danny Schofield, that's a massive call to have dropped his number one and brought in an emergency loan. First and foremost, they clearly don't understand how an emergency loan works, because if Jonny Mitchell was still available for selection, they couldn't have brought in an emergency loan. And then two, I think it was Sean Derry, who was one of the pundits, said, you know, on Monday morning, Danny Schofield might be getting a knock at his door because Jonny Mitchell will be saying, I want my place back. Well, he won't be, because he's injured. And that's the whole reason that they brought Stuart Moore in. Absolutely outrageous. I don't want to call people out, but when it's as bad as that, you just think, no, we have to put this right.
I agree entirely. I mean, I hope he doesn't knock the door too much, because it's a shoulder injury, so I'm sure that won't be great for his shoulder. Mental, because then it is exactly that. It's legally, they couldn't do that. They can't just bring an emergency loan in if you feel that your goalkeeper's had a tough day. And by the way, Jonny Mitchell on the whole this season has been very, very good. I think that was one of the very few mistakes I can think of this season. So, yeah, he wouldn't have been dropped, first and foremost. And I did wonder when I saw that goal, because I'm aware that he's had a bit of a shoulder problem for, you know, a few weeks now, whether, again, that would impact performance. Because I know myself from shoulder injuries, it is tough. As much as you try and block it out of your mind, when that shot comes down low to one side, you don't even think about it. It's an unconscious thing that you kind of, and I certainly had it towards the end of my career, where you'd be going down, you kind of know the pain's coming. And there were times where you maybe don't make the save, and it's because unconsciously your body doesn't want to put itself through pain. So when I saw that error, I did wonder whether that might have played a part. I don't know if that's right or not. It might not. I'm not too sure. But, you know, he obviously does have this shoulder injury, hence why he'll need a bit of time on the sidelines to get it right. And that is why, of course, they were then eligible for that emergency loan. And Stuart Moore was a good fit. You know, there's not many number threes in the championship now, but that was always the classic one when you go for an emergency loan, is your number three in the championship. And of course, Stuart Moore's been sat there at Blackpool waiting for an opportunity to play for quite some time. So it is a really good fit for Stuart Moore and for Doncaster. But then for them to do a segment on that and to kind of, yeah, it questions Danny Schofield, which I'm sure that Danny would have been watching that, would have been frustrated again, similarly to what we talk about these goalkeepers, where, all right, it's not necessarily relevant and it's not true, but similarly, a lot of people listening in wouldn't know the rules and might then question Danny Schofield as well.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax tip and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Clean Sheet Club. Here we go. Time for this. We start in the Premier League. Only one in the Premier League, and that was Emi Martinez, 3-4. Into the Championship. Zach Steffen, educated in the land of cookies. Thomas Vashlik, checking it out. Okay, you have to explain that to me, Matt. John Ruddy, good stuff. Jack Bonham, that's what it's all about. Angus Gunn, in for glory. Will Norris, pish, pash, posh. Jamie Cumming, Don. Matt Macy, Rompy Pompy, Jay Lynch, doesn't flinch, Christian Walton, Seventh Heaven, Callum Burton, as super as Cooper. Harry Isted, still unbeaten. And into League Two. Corey Adai, first of the year. Thomas Holy, clean sheet, check. John McCracken, what's McCracking? Mark Oxley, almost identikit to Stolarczyk. Lee Burge, as big as the Khalifa. Owen Evans, 2-3.
Very good, Richard. Very good. Would you like the table?
Yes.
Still top of the pile, Lawrence Vigouroux on 20 in 36. James Trafford, two beneath him on 18 in 38. And then on 17 apiece are Ben Wilson in 35 and Christian Walton with those seven in a row in 37. So that is quite gritty. He's now three off the top. To think that he was way off the pace, seven clean sheets back, and now he's right up there.
There you go, a late charge. Could you imagine if he comes through and ends up being top of the pile? I mean, that would be something that people would speak about for years to come, that he goes on to win Clean Sheet Club. I mean, we obviously have to stay impartial, but there is a part of me that's rooting for him.
Okay, and just a couple more bits to finish. We've got a bit of a funny here. I'm sure most people listening to this pod have seen it. It went viral on social media. This happened in Hungary. And I've got to say, I love every minute of this. So a seven-year-old called Enoch Varga was invited to MTK Budapest and their game against DVTK Diosur. It was a game, obviously, in the Hungary top flight. And just before kickoff, now I think this might be the reason as to why the Budapest goalkeeper Zsombor Senko has done what he's done. But just before kickoff, Varga has run from the halfway line with the ball to, I guess, tap into what he might have thought would have been an open goal, an empty net. But Senko was having none of it and twice denied poor Varga and then just booted the ball back to the halfway line. Varga was then carried off by, I presume, was his father with, you know, a few tears apparently in his eyes, poor lad.
Yeah, I'm torn on this one. I'm torn because, look, of course, first and foremost, goalkeeper, you do your job. And that's exactly what he's done. Made a good save down to his left, held the second one well. It was just the moment when he kicks the ball away. I felt that was a little bit harsh. I thought you could have at least rolled it to the penalty spot. Go on, have another go. And I think the lad would have quite enjoyed that. And then at some point, let him put it in the corner or something. But yeah, he was taking it very, very seriously and just kicked it away. And I did then, at that point, I was like, oh, actually, that's a little bit harsh. I feel a little bit sorry for the lad now.
Without reading too much into this, because I guess it's not that deep, but this sort of thing normally happens at half time. And it normally happens with a goalkeeper who's not playing. Is there maybe something in Senko's mind here where he's thinking, this is before a game, I'm in the zone, I'm focused, I don't want to entertain any of this nonsense, I don't want a ball going in the back of my net as we're about to kick off. So I'm sorry, lad, it's a hard life lesson to learn, but this is not going in and I just want to play football.
I guess it could be that. I mean, it does seem a bit bizarre. Like you say, the whole situation, and again, I don't know the exact context to this, but it does seem a bit bizarre. I've never, ever known that before a game. Kind of everyone's waiting around ready for kickoff, and they've let this lad do this. So there must have been something behind it. But again, why do you then do it at that point? Why isn't it something that's done at half time or what have you? So, look, it's one of those. It's different perspectives. I can see the goalkeeper's perspective. I mean, he's absolutely ruined the poor lad. You can see just how upset he was. So on that level, and again, probably just the nice side of me, I then feel really bad for the kid because, you know, it's meant to be a big moment for him. Run through, score a goal, get the adulation. You know, everyone's really happy in a nice mood and he's just absolutely killed the vibe.
And finally, Carly Telford, of course, a friend of the podcast, has been on the podcast early days, really, when we were first starting out. She has announced her retirement after a 20-year career. She spent her last season over in the US with San Diego Wave, their inaugural campaign. Of course, has played for Sunderland, for Leeds, for Charlton, for Perth Glory in Australia, for Notts County, and here for Liverpool and Chelsea, which is where she really made her name. Won an FA Cup there too, I believe. 27 caps for her country. She was part of three World Cup squads. Also was named in the Tokyo 2020 Olympics team. A long established career. We'll be sad to see her go, but no doubt she'll be staying within the realm of goalkeeping in some way.
Yeah, I really hope so. There you go. She talk about the goalkeeping pundit. That could be a nice role, because I remember from the podcast, she speaks really well and knows goalkeeping inside out. And like you say, phenomenal career, really top career. First and foremost, have a career that spanned as long as hers has at the top level is something that is so rare now. So, you know, on that level. And then, as you mentioned, the amount of games for England, for Chelsea, to be consistently as good as she's been. Huge well done to her. And it's great to see all the plaudits flooding in.
Good stuff. Okay, well, it's international break now, isn't it? So we might ourselves take a break and come back in a couple of weeks' time. Speaking of which, of course, Fraser Forster called up for the England squad. Nick Pope actually ruling himself out with injury. So he's getting another call up, Forster, to the senior side. The under-21s, it was Josh Griffiths, Anthony Patterson, James Trafford and Carl Rushworth in there. James Beadle, who we've spoken about already today, he's in the under-19 squad with Tommy Simkin and Joe Whitworth, another goalkeeper we've spoken about. Scotland, of course, we referenced Sander Clark, didn't we, in last week's show. He did get that call up for Scotland alongside Angus Gunn and Liam Kelly. And the only other ones worth mentioning, maybe Northern Ireland, Bailey Peacock, Farrell, Connor Hazard and Luke Southwood back in the fold.
Yeah, I think just to mention Fraser Forster, because, again, credit to him. You know, he stepped in at Spurs. You did wonder how he might deal with it, not having played for a while. Obviously, first games for Spurs, very different from what he experienced at Southampton. But credit to him, because I think his performance levels have been very good. Lots of top saves that we spoke about in the last few weeks. So to get an England call-up, huge credit to him. And credit to the England selectors as well, because I think that, again, to reward the good recent work is always nice to see. And then, yeah, lots of other names you've mentioned there, and they're all performing well at their various clubs. Obviously, a lot of those lads that you mentioned in the 21s in particular on loan and playing regularly. So a big well done to them, and should be an interesting couple of weeks.
Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the sticks, keepers.
Go away.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only.
Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with a sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.